It's 13 minutes to 11 o'clock. Your thoughts on the history of 021-446-0567-0725-671-567. You should have heard the pre-interview. You should have heard try to get Anwar Gambino and Melvin Matthews on the same phone at the same time discussing what we wanted to talk about today. And we went over a heck of a lot of time today. It was only supposed to be 30 minutes, but what was almost a 2-hour pre-interview ended up being a 40-minute on-air interview. But fascinating, gentlemen, and fascinating stories. 021-446-0567. Now, Andrew Motshekga, the basic education minister, saying in Eyewitness News, as much as the department wants to reopen schooling to 100% capacity, current lockdown regulations do not allow, the current climate does not allow, particularly if you're looking at the disparity between schools that have access and have small class numbers and schools who don't have the proper facilities and have large class sizes. Look, when the department said it was planning to open to 100% capacity, this was agreed upon by unions. 48,000 teachers are vaccinated in the Western Cape alone. And we also look at the impact of the loss of schooling, what impact that has had on children. The NIDSCRAB survey saying that 500,000 South African school children have not returned to school since last year. And we weigh up what are the long-term economic implications for this. Dr. Deborah Shepherd, among other roles, she's an economist who looks at education. How do we quantify the 18 months of stop-start learning in South Africa? Deborah, particularly if we're looking at the impact of 5, 10, 15 years' time when many of these youngsters, you know, go on to matric and start their working lives. What impact to our economy could this 18 months of stop-start learning have on us?
Hi, Lester. Thank you for having me back. Glad to carry on the conversation. So, what we've found throughout the data that we've collected is that in the stop start, as you mentioned, the stop start of schooling, learners have potentially lost anywhere between 70 to 100% of a year of learning. And the DB itself puts where we are at the moment back 20 years. So all the gains that were made, prior to 2020, gains in terms of children attending school. I mean, those aged 7 to 15, 99% of 7 to 15-year-olds were attending school in 2019, 98% if you go up to 17 years. And that has been quite dramatically reduced. We're now at about, well, according to our estimates, 93, 94% attendance. And then also just gains in terms of basic numeracy and literacy. If we think about, you know, 20 years, we've gone back 20 years, we compare this to Latin America, for example, which is usually the subset of countries that we compare South African to, being a high middle income country. Latin America was closed for far longer than we were. They had absolutely no contact teaching. We've had stop start, rotational, platoon timetables. Latin America puts themselves 50 years back.
Wow.
So, you know, the implications of this are you know, throughput through the education system. What is going to happen to the overall attainment levels of learners? You know, we know that the longer learners remain outside of school, the higher the chances of dropout, disengagement. So that obviously has implications for how many learners are going to successfully complete.
And this affects not only productivity now, but it is the precursor to the possible loss of productivity, of having qualified people, actual people qualified or available to even go into the working arena. This then affects us then in 10, 15, 20 years' time.
100%. And I mean, if we currently think about the problem we face with youth unemployment, how is this going to then exacerbate that concern? And our economy is becoming, you know, over the last decade has become progressively more skills intensive. And so we also have to consider are we going to be able to meet the demands of a skills-intensive labor market? So it is very concerning. The longer schools remain closed and function in this way, this will have compounding effects. I mean, so the estimate that we put on learning loss, that is an estimate which it grows with time. So last year, the estimate was for every day of learning lost, that's 1.25, well, physical learning, so time spent in school, that equates to 1.25 days of actual learning, so the cognitive learning. Now we're putting that estimate at 1.5 days. So as, you know, time ticks over, that number gets larger because learning is something that takes place, you know, it has to take place daily. Things are reinforced. When learners are attending school one day a week, for example, because that's how some schools are functioning at the moment. Yeah. A grade one learner may only be attending once a week. Mm. 4 days away from school means that everything that was taught in that one day is potentially lost.
Yeah. A lot of our focus is on the National Senior Certificate at the end of the year. And there's already a question here that asks, could you find out if the NSC matric papers have already been set? Last year, the Basic Education Department was adamant that the NSC exam should be written. Now, we don't know that answer just yet, Deborah, but a lot of focus is on matrics. But when we look at, and you argue grade one is where it all starts, developmental and foundation phase, whether it be developing of fine motor skills to simply the sounding of vowels and consonants. While matric is, of course, important, it's that grade one foundation phase, which is the absolute building blocks, and we lose our time there, then we can see, you know, the impact it will have further down the line.
Yes, and I think this is where the DBE's current approach is, I think it's very well thought out. So the approach right now is to teach at the right level, focus on the fundamentals, focus on the what they could refer to as a core curriculum. So there has been some curriculum trimming that has taken place across all grades. And what is also being reintroduced is systemic evaluation. So what this means is that learners at grade 3, grade 6, and grade 9 will be assessed. They'll take a sample representative of all schools in the country. And that way, instead of relying only on matric as the time at which we can now assess the health of the education system, so to speak, we can now look at performance earlier on. So how are benchmarks being met at the end of the various phases, so the end of foundation, intermediate, and senior phase. And as far as I'm aware, the first time that this is going to take place is October this year. So hopefully by the end of this year, we will have a lot more information about where learners in grade 3, grade 6, and grade 9 are at, and not having to just rely on that, yes, that final hurdle in order to see how the system has been affected or has managed to, you know, claim some of the learning lost back.
Deborah, it's cold comfort that South Africa is not the only particularly developing country or middle-income country that is grappling with this. As you mentioned, Latin America, deep impact on schooling there. I've read a discussion paper on education activists in Sri Lanka looking at the exact same problem, the need and to open responsibly, but also to maintain safety. This is a global issue.
Yes. Yeah, so that's, I mean, that at the end of the day, that those are the two things you're having to weigh up, is the safety versus the learning. But I think the thing we need to always remember is that education is about saving lives. Mm. We know that education is very much related to life and learning trajectory. So it's related to poverty, it's related to health outcomes, it's related to life expectancy. And so the longer we keep learners out of school, we're increasing loss of life through these other indirect but more longer term implications of keeping schools closed. And we also have to remember that schools are for many learners the safest place for them to be, because with the sort of economic fallout of COVID-19 and the effect that it has on household food insecurity, for example, we know household food insecurity is very much related to interpersonal violence. And so we also have to consider, you know, what are the implications of keeping learners at home for their safety and social emotional well-being? Schools may well be the safest place for them to be right now.
If we look at that, I don't know, how do economists quantify emotional and interpersonal development? Is the ability to quantify that? Because teaching is, of course, not just reading and learning and maths. It's also about interpersonal skills. It's also about developing relationships. What would you call the soft skills of being a fully functional human being? I don't know if that is able to be quantified.
Yeah. I think it is, and I think that this has kind of been a blind spot for economists, especially educational economists like myself. And it's something that I think needs to be given more attention, because I was reading a paper this morning, actually in preparation for this interview, about Botswana and how 82% of parents in Botswana actually say that the function of school is more about those soft skills. It's more about the personal engagement than about preparing a child for university. It was only 18% of parents who said, my child is going to school for the aim of going to university. And so I think, you know, we have to pay more attention to that. There are existing measures within our trends in mathematics and sciences studies, so the TIMSS data, which we do use quite often to look at the health of South African education. So there are measures of sense of belonging, whether not children are feeling capable of learning, whether they're feeling engaged in the classroom. So there are these measures. And I think we haven't yet begun to really interrogate those indicators or those outcomes of education. So that definitely, I think, you know, given what we would expect this closure to have, the impact it would have had on the social emotional well-being of learners, it is something that needs to form a focus alongside learning when we are now measuring how things are changing moving forward.
Deborah, just my final question. I know it's not a question of open at all costs. It's open at with a balance of safety of young people and learners and teachers, as well as getting a curriculum going again. But at what point do we have to make a hard decision that try to at least firstly make schooling and the safety of learners equitable, so that even the most crowded of classrooms can meet and can gather at safe levels, as the same way a school with low class numbers? But at what point do we have to make that very difficult decision?
Sure, that's a very hard question to answer. And, you know, from my own research and from the research done by the South African Human Rights Council, you know, the call to open more fully was already made last year when we first started to become aware of these cleavages that were now emerging within the school system. Cleavages that were already there, but have now become even more exacerbated. And so, you know, I think the challenge is now, as you say, to try and find out how do we go about assisting these very large schools. I mean, I've even heard of one school, learners only attend once every 8 days. Wow. That is how large the school is.
Dr. Deborah Shepherd.